Welcome to Civil Defense Radio, bringing you news, commentary, and the views of subject matter experts on what is happening in the emergency preparedness, community resiliency, and critical infrastructure protection movements. Civil Defense Radio is more than just a podcast about a new American civil defense structure. It is also an educational show and web presence highlighting the many serious threats, both natural and man-made, that our nation faces. Those issues many news outlets are afraid to speak about or unwilling to mention. Civil defense equals resiliency equals survival. To be resilient, it takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation you may find yourselves in. Civil defense helps reduce panic in a disaster, and we hope to help you with information and knowledge so you may be better able to help your family, neighborhood, and community when needed. You can find out more on our website at civildefenseradio.com, on Facebook at Civil Defense Radio, where we post often about the threats that we see, and on Twitter at civil_def_radio. Now, let's get on with our show. Today, we have John Cole with Texas Disasters on the show. And how you doing, John?
I'm doing really well. Thank you for having me on, Preston. I'm doing great.
It's our pleasure, man. I've been following you for quite a while and your progress with Texas Disasters and how you guys got started and stuff, and I'm impressed with what you're doing out there in Houston and what's been going on since formation of your concept out there, which, you know, I see a lot of things that are the essence of civil defense, in my opinion, and Texas Disaster is just one of those elements that I think is a civil defense organization by another name. And so if you would, sir, please give us a breakdown of what happened in 2017 in your hometown of Houston, and what brought you to forming this great company you have, Texas Disasters, Inc.
Thank you so much for that kind intro, Preston. And likewise, I've been following you and your show for quite some time since you started, and you're doing some fantastic things. And every chance that people can get a chance to learn what you're teaching is another step towards being much better prepared and eventually, hopefully, saving some lives as well. And that's kind of our mission as well, is to bring about a system that helps people better prepare, better respond to emergency situations like major disasters. And I got involved with building this thing from Hurricane Harvey. And like you mentioned, back in 2017, Harvey hit Houston, and it was so bad that first responders were severely backed up, and people were waiting many, many hours to get rescued, and sometimes days or sometimes not at all. And so what ended up having to happen is ordinary folks like myself ended up getting involved with doing rescue and rescue coordination. And because of the severity of the situation, people were just desperate for any kind of help. And so we had folks out there in their John boats and their jet skis and their airboats, and just kind of mass chaos trying to get people out of their houses before their the roof caved in or the water engulfed their house. And so during that time, we just had a lot of issues that we shouldn't have had if we would have had just a better way of doing things. I'm kind of the person that always looks at different problems and tries to find different ways around them, making more efficient or safer or easier to make something go around it. And so during the Harvey experience, I realized quite a few different things. We had issues with coordination was a big problem. We would have 20 boats in one area where we only needed like maybe two or three. And then we'd have two or three boats in one area where we needed 20. And so everybody wanted to help, and everybody was doing what they could to help, but they just didn't really know how to help. and they didn't know exactly where to help. And so we utilized an app called Zello. It's a walkie-talkie app that's kind of similar to your push-to-talk Nextel telephones for the communication during that time. And so people would come up online and say, hey, you know, I need rescue. My address is XYZ Street, and you know, I need help now. And so we actually manually inputted that information. We had to kind of do somewhat of vetting, make sure that it was legit and that they weren't trying to just pull us away from other things that we were trying to do, and make sure that they weren't trying to ambush us, because these were all very real problems we experienced during Harvey. And so we took their information, put it in by hand, wrote it down by hand, and then put it into an Excel spreadsheet. And then kind of dispatch that out all manually to people that would come in and say, hey, I'm here to help people. And so people would end up listening in on the conversations, and they would you know, drive out to an area that they felt like they needed help. And so that's where we ended up getting too many boats in one area and not enough in others. We also had issues trying to find people with specific assets or skill sets. It was very difficult, time-consuming, and a lot of times fruitless, you know, whether it was somebody with an airboat or who was experienced in search and rescue or had an EpiPen or something like that, or warehouse space to do a medical triage unit, and so on and so forth. And so, you know, finding those specific things was very difficult. We had to take to social media to try to find them. We would come online to the Zello app and say, hey, you know anybody with a warehouse? And then track down those people to actually have that specific asset or skill set. And it's just very difficult. And then privacy was another huge issue that we experienced during Harvey. We you know, we actually we used the Zello app, like I said, and anybody can come online and listen to that that conversation. And so we had instances where, you know, people would give out false information saying, hey, I'm Joe Smith and I'm here to rescue people, and end up being somebody completely different with lots of psychiatric issues and things of that nature. Or we have people you know, listening in on the conversations to people's addresses and coming in shortly after they were rescued and vandalizing or robbing the house because they knew exactly when to go and where to go. And so through all these experiences, I just kind of kept tally of the different issues and problems that we experienced, and I just started thinking of better ways of you know, going around those problems and solving those problems. And that's where I came up with the basis for what we're building right now. The website that we're building is social.network, S-O-S-C-I-A-L .network, or .net, one you want to go to. And it's a social media platform. It's kind of similar to your Facebook, your normal traditional social media, where you can go in and post things. You have groups, you have friends and followers and messages and things of that nature. But it's a little bit different in the sense that it has a command structure that facilitates the coordination side of things. So it's kind of, if your viewers are familiar with the NIMS protocols, it's kind of a loose version of the NIMS protocols, where certain people are able to respond to certain information or disseminate certain information or, you know, respond to a particular event. And then it allows somebody to come online and hit a button. Hopefully their profile information is already completed. If not, go ahead and fill out a request to join, and then verify their identity, and then come online and hit a button to get rescued in the event of a rescue situation. And from there, like I said, it uploads their exact profile information, their contact information, any pertinent needs, pets, additional family members, and then it kind of submits it into a queue that is sorted down to priority and distance. From there, it kind of gets transferred over to somebody that's in charge of distributing out that information and dispatching that information. And so that's kind of the loose basis for it. And from there, it has several other different functions, but that's kind of where it all started at.
Now, you mentioned ambushing. What kind of ambushes did you guys, boat drivers and rescuers, encounter out there? what was going on?
I was fortunate enough to never experience any of it, but being around for the months that I was, I heard of several different instances where people were called out and in remote neighborhoods saying, hey, you know, there's folks out here that needed to be rescued. They'd actually come out there and ambush these people, start shooting at them. I don't know if anybody was ever actually killed, but so far I haven't heard of anybody that was, but they had quite a few different instances like that. A lot of it was not necessarily ambushes, but people, I don't know if they're from other areas of the world or where they may have been from, but they were actually calling people out to specific areas that had no need for rescue, no need for any kind of assistance. I guess it was their version of being an internet troll or doing a prank. But yeah, they would have people come out there, and there was be no need whatsoever for any kind of rescue whatsoever.
Well, that's sad that people would be messing around like that. And the system that you have in place now through this new website, is that going to cure that, or is it? How are the people going to know how to get a hold of you guys in another Harvey type of situation, so that they can get legitimate help and not, you know, and then the people that you're dispatching out, how are they going to know that they're going to a legitimate request for help?
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the biggest ways to curb, false reactions and people scamming the system is going to be identity verification. Making sure that person is who they say they are, and not too many people are going to come online with a real identity and submit a false request for rescue. So I think that's one of the biggest ways to curb that. And then also,
so is this going to be an app that you have to sign into? Is that the idea?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It'd be something that ideally we would have in a situation where we're expecting a hurricane or something like that. We would already be broadcasting our message to get on board and sign up for a profile and have all your information, preloaded into the system to where that is all you have to do is hit a button and request information. But yeah, there's identity verification protocols on the website where basically you hold up a copy of your photo ID and along with your picture, of yourself in the app, to where you're holding up your ID next to yourself, and it takes a picture of it, and it verifies your actual identity. And then that picture and everything gets thrown away. It gets discarded at the end of the day, so it's all very secure as far as data privacy and things of that nature. That's one thing we're extremely concerned about is making sure that everybody's data is very safe. But once it verifies who you are, it attaches it to your profile and makes sure that you are saying you are. And then also another layer of protection is we also can cross-check to their Facebook profile when somebody is feeling a little bit weary. They can look at their Facebook profile and see what kind of postings they had and how long they've been a member, and kind of scan for different inconsistencies in their profiles and make sure that they are a legit person.
Okay. Now, how does, like in my county, I live in the county and not inside of a actual city. So in the county, we have the emergency system pushes out text messages. You sign up just like with the state emergency management. You sign up and get, these updates and warnings and stuff. The county does that as well. So does Houston do that? And also, are you guys creating a double system, or are you guys going to be working with them on this, or how is that going to work so that people aren't required to do two things? And it seems like it may be cumbersome at some point in emergency, because the best laid plans of mice and men go awry real quick when stress is induced.
Yep. I absolutely agree, and we want redundancy to a certain degree, but we don't want it to be over redundant. We don't want it to cause complications or irritation, especially, like I said, during an emergency event. Our future plans are absolutely to work with as many existing entities as there already are. We want to be able to kind of be able to interoperate with those existing systems. Right now, as it is, we are separate from them. However, we can kind of integrate their systems into our systems, so that a way they can populate on our particular app or our platform, anyways. I guess there's a couple sides to that. You know, when it comes to the existing systems out there, I don't feel like they're as up to date and crowdsourced as they possibly could be. I think when it comes down to somebody reporting a tornado or something like that, it's a lot more of a time delay. It takes a larger amount of time in order for that emergency notification to populate in their systems. And so I think if we can actually break it down to a smaller geographic area to where we have our users able to report these particular instances, I think we can get our emergency alerts out quicker than what they have currently going for them. The ideal situation is we're wanting to make this platform something that is relevant on a day-to-day basis and something that is beyond disasters. If we do this right, we can have these people signed up before a disaster even strikes, something that they will use on a day-to-day basis be involved with on a more regular basis as opposed to just when disasters strike. That's one thing we noticed fairly on, that these types of systems and organizations out there that respond to disaster situations, they're very busy during disasters, but when there's a lull or not a disaster going on, it's almost ghost town. We're talking to quite a few different disaster relief organizations in the beginning and still to this day, but that's their biggest problem. Everybody wants to donate money when a disaster strikes, and then also they want to give up their time and energy and volunteerism to that particular organization only when disasters strike. So we have to figure out some ways to make it relevant on a day-to-day basis. Hopefully we've got that figured out as well.
Well, that's a good plan, and I hope you're successful with it. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we will be back in a moment. Hey, friends, this is Preston. Please allow me to speak with you about something you may want to add to your regular health maintenance routine, as well as your preparedness supplies. A few years ago, I came across an article in a preparedness magazine that caught my attention. My wife and I have always been health conscious and have taken various supplements over the years. However, this article introduced us to the world of essential oils. My wife began researching to find a reputable company with high quality products. What she found was a company that we have been with now for about 4 years, using their products, many of them daily. The company is doTERRA, and their products are certified pure therapeutic grade essential oils. Essential oils come in all grades on the scale, but doTERRA oils are, in our opinion, at the top. Sure, you can go to Walmart or your local pharmacy and purchase essential oils, but not many of them will be recommended for internal use. Many of our oils can be used orally, topically, and diffused for their wonderful aromatic fragrance and health benefits. Some of our favorites we use almost daily are lemon, clove, frankincense, lavender, On Guard Blend, Peppermint, and Melaleuca, also known as tea tree oil. These oils have become our go-to remedies for managing our health throughout the year. In fact, we credit our oils for our overall good health. You can too. Just visit our website at www.oilsforlifetoday. That's oils, number four, CertifiedPureLifeToday.com and explore the wonderful world of certified pure therapeutic grade essential oils for yourself. And we are back with John Cole and Texas Disasters. John, that was a great introduction for what you guys are doing. Now, there's been some other weather events that have hit Houston and the area out there. I know Texas had just a week or so ago had some nasty weather go through. How were you guys able to respond to that? It may not have rose to the level of Harvey, but were you guys involved in that?
No, we actually haven't been involved with too many disasters since probably about the California wildfires. And then shortly after that, there was another hurricane that we got involved with. But probably for the last good year or so, I've been working on the development side of things, just market researching and building out the platform. So it hasn't been at its full capacity up until recently, and even then it's almost done, but still not completely exactly where I want it to be on the minimal viable product stage of things. So we're still kind of in development stage of things. We had different releases to where we're capable of responding to disasters, but only on a very needed emergency side of things. So we haven't put it out there to be utilized. I didn't want to be a testing ground in a live situation. I want to make sure that every bug is worked out before we actually put people's lives at risk. So the latest, the most significant thing that I feel like we have a big potential with, coming in and solving some issues with would be the California wildfires. There were a lot of instances where people were out there. There wasn't a lot of people rescue going on, but there was a lot of animal rescue. And what was happening is, people would come from out of state, and they would come from all around just to help these folks out and with their trailers and rescue a lot of horses in particular and livestock and whatnot. We had quite a few instances where people were coming in and doing these horse rescues, quote unquote, where they would load these horses up into their trailers and only to never be seen again. And these were, not your run-of-the-mill horses. These were, $10,000-$20,000 racehorses and thoroughbreds and very expensive horses. And so they actually had a pretty big problem with that going on. But, hopefully we should have our platform live, this summer. Hopefully we don't need it, but, I'm very close to completing the MVP of our program and should be able to put that in play pretty soon here.
What is the geographic area that you plan on covering with your company? Is it something that you're going to try and make sure that is available for all of Texas, neighboring states, or what is your vision on that?
Yeah, I mean, eventually we want to be worldwide. We want to be able to put this platform in every single part of the world. We obviously realize that that's a pretty big vision and a pretty good, pretty good task. So at first, we're going to start off kind of in the Texas and surrounding areas, and it'll be a pretty quick transition. But we want to be able to, like I said, kind of exercise and do some drills and make sure that any kind of bugs are worked out prior to releasing it and going live in a real situation. There was an instance with Hurricane Florence where we were pretty much ready and much more efficient than what we currently have, because right now we really don't have anything. We've got Zello, and that's pretty much about it. There's another couple other little apps out there, but as far as anything to coordinate major disasters, we don't have anything. So we're better off than with what we have right now than anything else that we have. So we're putting ourselves in a position to where if we were needed, we would open it up and allow people to come on board and use it. But during Florence, it was fairly bad, but it wasn't so bad to where we were needing and want to risk ourselves and putting yourself out there.
A mutual friend of ours, Todd DeVoe, he's the host of EM Weekly, and he has a sponsor on his platform, Titan HST. Have you taken a look at that?
I have. They have some pretty interesting stuff there. I think it's, it's something that, there's a lot of them out there, I think, but, something that is more geared towards governmental agencies, where they have the tools to do this types of things. They have the tools to coordinate the disaster and major emergency situations, but it really comes down to something that is only available to first responders or governmental agencies or major nonprofits, somebody with the financial backing to be able to pay for these types of things. And so we wanted to make sure that we can provide something like that to everybody. I don't feel like being able to save somebody's lives is something that they should have to pay for. So we want to make sure that everybody has access to those particular tools. And, whenever it comes down to another Harvey-like situation, it calls for many more people than just the vetted first responders and, the governmental agencies. It's kind of an all hands on deck. And right now there is no way to bring everybody together to coordinate those types of situations. And so we want to make sure that we have something in place that gives people the tools to where if they're needed, we have people that are already trained and vetted and verified and able to dispatch, because during Harvey, a lot of the work was done from out of state. People were coming in from all over the world doing dispatch and coordination and things like that on the Zello app. And so a lot of the work can be done, remote. And so if we have somebody that is already on the platform that is skilled in dispatch and skilled in first responder situations, then they can kind of guide people and help them be a lot safer when it comes down to a real emergency situation if they're not already skilled in it.
Now, as far as coordination with other organizations, you're familiar with CERT, right? The Civilian Emergency Response Teams.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's some regional teams out there, like this one. It's pretty big out in Central Texas, around Fort Hood and that area. It's Centex DART, and these guys, they're pretty active. Have you reached out to any organizations like that, and what's been the reception like?
Yeah, I actually have reached out to quite a few different organizations like that. And so far, all the response has been extremely positive. There are some players that feel like they can handle it all, and they don't want any outside help, and that's fine. Our goal is to bring everybody together on this platform and give them a centralized place to where they can all work together, but also work independently as well. We want to protect their privacy. We want to protect their organizations where, if there's certain information that they don't want to disseminate, we can provide that means to make it happen. But if they need to co-coordinate with another organization, we want them to be able to make that easy as well. Everybody's been very responsive to it. Recently just talked to a lady that has 30,000 volunteers underneath her umbrella, and she does work all over the world, and she's pretty much very very excited about it, and pointed out a lot of the things that are currently just not in place that that we're solving the problem to. So I think once people realize that this capabilities are out there, and that it's not going to cost them a thing, and it's going to if anything help them, I think they'll get on board.
Well, that's
pretty quickly.
Good. So, what's next for Texas Disasters? What is the main thing that you want to get accomplished between now and the time when your app goes active out there for everybody to start downloading and inputting information? What else is going on with Texas Disasters that you're trying to get accomplished between now and then?
Yeah, and it's just to clarify, it's more of a platform right now. It's there's no native app to it. It's all web based. It's what they call a responsive website. So it looks very nice and functions really nice on a mobile device, but it's it's all web based. But the main thing that we're concerned about is a couple different things. Positioning this corporation that we're building into putting in a position to where it's always going to be what's best for people. So that's just kind of one of the things that I've been very careful about since the beginning of starting this company. If it ever comes down to a question of making a buck or saving somebody's life or making it easier on people, always want it to be about people. So I've been very careful, so I haven't taken any outside investment in making this thing happen. But it's very important. I've been 2 years ago I had pretty successful company. I was making really decent money and supporting my family very, very well. And since Harvey, I felt the calling to really make this a reality. So I ditched my company and have been doing this full time ever since. And so investment is very important to make it a usable product in the end, because there's a lot more things, a lot more functionalities that this product is capable of doing, but it's just not something that I personally am wanting to pull my hair out and develop myself. I'm fairly capable of doing some development, but I'm not absolutely not a extremely well versed developer as some of the folks out there. So getting some investment for that, then also the marketing side of thing, in order for this thing to really take off, it requires mass adoption. So if we can put the platform in a position where it's altruistic, we people control the organization, we give 100% of our profits back to a nonprofit foundation. That nonprofit foundation is going to own the majority of the for-profit corporation and things of that nature. Really feel like we can create enough of a reason for people to switch to this platform and utilize it on a day-to-day basis. So we kind of want to make it in competition, and we want to compete essentially with Facebook. And so that's going to take a great deal of advertisement, a great deal of support. So we've got to be able to have some money to make that happen. So to make that happen, I've got to get the MVP completed out, which is our minimal viable product, which is pretty much everything that I've told you guys so far. And from there, we also need additional people on board to help us create the vision and create the corporation and create the movement from here on out. So we've been looking for the last probably 2 or 3 months, so maybe a little bit longer, for additional advisors and people to join the company. And we've got some really fantastic folks on board. Just got off the phone with a gentleman named Douglas Rushkoff. He's kind of known for a lot of social media stuff. He's very, very much into creating and maintaining organizations that are human centric. We want to make sure that this company is not another Google, not another Facebook. Basically unlike any other organization out there, where we don't extract value from communities. Right. We add value. Getting other people with the same vision, same mentality on board is probably one of the other things that we're going full force with over the last couple months, getting the MVP built. And once that happens, we should be ready to start seeking outside investment. And once that happens, then basically the world is always
Well, back. That's cool. That's cool. But, government seems like they like owning the disaster field. And so have you run across any troubles or challenges, we might say, with with either local, state, or federal government in anything that you're planning to do?
For the most part, not really, no. I mean, we've actually been really receptive by first responders, people in FEMA. As a matter of fact, we actually even talked to the former FEMA administrator, Brock Long, back a couple months ago, and we're still in talks with him in response to a possible advisory scope position within our organization. So he's real receptive to it. Other people on board with FEMA. We had the public, I forget what the official title was, but he was somebody high up in FEMA. He actually reached out to me as well. And so I think, they're coming around. They realize, that it's kind of an all hands on deck approach to disaster mitigation to really make it successful. You know, it's a whole community effort. So I honestly feel like this is about the only way to truly make that happen. So I think they're realizing that as well. When it comes to, veterans, when it comes to police officers, firefighters, EMTs, they're all very, very receptive to what we're doing. So I think, and in fact, they're probably the most receptive out of all groups of people, so I think that shouldn't be an issue.
The challenges that you just articulated, those are pretty much the ones that you've had with your platform so far. You're dealing with various governmental agencies and such. And so what about any pre-disaster mitigation in the community where, FEMA's been talking about this for a couple of years about developing a culture of preparedness. And what are you guys going to do with that as far as helping the community learn about being prepared and getting prepared for such events as a Harvey or worse?
Yeah, well, I think the biggest thing is creating something that that kind of keeps them involved on a more regular basis. And I think it's all about, having eyeballs and keeping their attention. And I feel like, if we can create something that that attracts them to learning about disaster mitigation and preparing, and attracts them to learning about CPR and just other facets of preparation altogether, I think we can create that whole community awareness and preparedness. And I feel like we can do that by several different ways. When somebody is doing something to broaden their knowledge, whether it's by completing an online course or participating in a particular exercise or something like that, we can reward them. And we do that because it's a little bit off topic and it's just kind of more towards our future vision, but eventually we want to make this platform something that is, like I said, utilized on a day-to-day basis. And how we determine we would do that is by creating a kind of a economy on our platform. And where that came from is during Harvey, we never really knew what kind of asset or skill set we needed. There's a lot of circumstances to where people you would have never thought would be involved with a disaster situation got involved. Baker can bake cookies for some refugees or people that are housed up in a refugee camp, or a realtor can find real estate to house donations or a medical triage unit. A boat mechanic can fix people's boats. There's so many different things that you really never think about, on a day-to-day basis. And then after the fact, a disaster recovery, roofers can help with roofs that collapsed, or sheetrock, lawyers, pretty much everybody has some sort of role to play in emergency situations if it happens in their community. And so we figure out a way that we can kind of create an economy on our platform, kind of like an Uber of everything type economy, to where, you know, if you're a roofer, you can advertise on our platform. But then in a disaster situation to where that roofer is needed and you have a family that is in dire need of a roofer and they go over there and they help them. And we didn't want to make money off of a disaster. We didn't want to make money off of helping people. So, and we figured that most people feel that same way. They just want to help. And so if that roofer goes over there and helps somebody, they can get kind of paid back or subsidized in an advertising credit. And so we can utilize this platform to kind of bring them in on a day-to-day basis to where, you know, there's day-to-day emergencies as well. You know, somebody having a heart attack at a restaurant, why not connect them to one of our volunteer EMTs who's eating lunch next door and get over there, you know, before an ambulance does? Or, you know, what if, a disabled person needs help, changing a light bulb or something like that? You know, why not connect them to a person that's able to help and then reward them with an advertising credit on our platform? And so we figured with that and then just kind of being a showcase for positivity, kind of like a Facebook for positivity, whether it's corporations, a furniture company does something good in the community, they go out and donate, you know, $10,000 worth of furniture to a needy family, you know, why not showcase that on our platform and, kind of have a chronological display of all the good things that people and corporations do. So we have a bunch of different ways to keep people's eyeballs on our platform on a day-to-day basis. And so if we can do that, we can kind of pique their interest and then also reward them for doing certain things in a disaster preparation situation. We could reward them for taking a CPR class online. We could, reward them for, being involved in an exercise and things of that nature. So it kind of gives people an incentive to participate in it. And then not only that, we can also make like Facebook has different games and things of that nature. If we have a big enough corporation with enough users and enough eyeballs, we can have developers come in and start creating apps on top of our platform that gets people interested in disaster mitigation. Like, they have little games that they can play, they can download and play some, Bubble Crush, something else that kind of, I don't really know.
Yeah.
I know they're out there and I know there's ways of doing it. I haven't thought about it
well,
too
maybe,
much, but I know there's...
Maybe one of our listeners has an idea and they can send you a note with some idea and it sounds like you have really, really thought this whole concept through and there's so many avenues that you can take and the growth potential of what your vision is remarkable. You know, having a national and international vision like that is fantastic, and I commend you, John, for what you're really you're going to change a lot of things with this Texas disaster concept. It may wake up a lot of other organizations that will want to jump on board with you, and be associated with Texas disasters and the work that you guys are going to be doing. I'm excited for you for what you've told us so far and the vision that you have. Man, it really is something.
Thank you. I really appreciate that because that means a whole lot coming from you, Preston. I know your expertise speaks volumes. If praise from you, it's much appreciated. And we really do have just a phenomenal chance of doing some really, really fantastic things. I mean, because, there's a whole world out there of digital advertising right now that is just skyrocketing. I mean, there's $150 billion that went to Google and Facebook last year. And if we can take just a chunk of that and use it towards, charitable or just not necessarily philanthropic, but, just positive initiatives, and allow the people to kind of make sure that, that is where it goes and have their, you know, accountability behind it and their voice and their opinions, and, you know, empower people to create a real impactful change. You know, I don't see why people wouldn't start switching away from their current platforms that they're using for social media and start switching to something more like this. You know, I know with you know, with Facebook and Google, there's, you know, a lot of concerns with privacy and things like that. But when it comes down to it, you know, we've got these big mega corporations making all this money, and they really aren't doing much for society. You know, they're doing their little initiatives here and there, and pretending to be like they're all you know, about helping people. But when it comes down to it, it's all about making the bottom dollar for the shareholders. And when you flip that narrative on its heels and make that narrative about people and creating value for the people and creating initiatives that really have the financial backing to create some just monumental change, then, you know, I can't see how it's not going to create a massive effect that really opens people's eyes.
Yeah, and it changes the way people think about emergencies and disaster preparedness and the concept of helping your neighbor and things like that. It's cascading in so many positive ways. So how can people get a hold of you? I know we're going to have your information listed at the bottom of this podcast when it's published on my website. But, you know, for those who are going to be listening on an app and driving down the road, or maybe somewhere where they're not able to hit the website, how can they get a hold of you? How can they check out what you're doing online and what social media outlets do you have that they can go to?
Yeah, the biggest social media outlet that I use is LinkedIn. I felt was the most cohesive to our vision and needs, I guess. So I do a lot of outreach on LinkedIn. You can search for me, John, J-O-N, Cole, C-O-L-E, Texas Disasters. Then I should come right up. Feel free to send me a request, and I'll accept it. And then other than that, we don't do a whole lot of Facebook, just because I'm not a big Facebook fan. I got off Facebook probably a couple years ago. Every now and then I'll post something, but yeah, pretty much LinkedIn is the best way. Other than that, you can go to our website, which is social.network. So just like social, but it's social.network, or you can go to .net for short if you want, but yes. .network. You can email me. I'll put my email address down at the bottom of your profile there. If they want to email me, free to do that. You know, that's pretty much the best ways to go on there. And I think we actually even have a contact form on the website if they want to just go there and fill out the contact form as well.
All right, that's great, John. It was really a pleasure having you on the show today. I'm excited for you guys, and I look forward to watching you guys grow and your company come together and reach out and help people, not only in the great state of Texas, but around the nation and even around the world once it catches on. So thank you very much for being on the show. And any last words you want to give to the audience?
No, other than you know, I appreciate what you're doing, Preston. You know, it takes people like yourself to really draw some attention to the concerns of what we're trying to address. You know, right now it seems as though everybody kind of is starting to wake up and starting to realize, you know, with you know, the way the world is kind of going, that you know, being prepared is not such a Looney Tunes type of thing. Yeah. To do, you know, it's not you know, it's not the very smart. So you know, helping people realize the potentials of what could be out there, you know, and just be able to have a medium to share our stories. People don't realize that, you know, when situations like Harvey come around, they think, you know, everything's going to be fine. They don't realize that it's going to come down to them actually be the one, you know, out there rescuing people and helping their neighbors. So, you know, having a place to be able to tell my story is greatly appreciated, and just doing what you do is freaking awesome, man. I love it.
Great. Well, thanks a lot. And, you know, we believe here at Civil Defense Radio that everything starts with the individual being prepared. We believe that you should begin looking at a 14-day supply of food and water and everything that you're going to need to live without electricity in case something happens. 14 days is a minimum. You should shoot for 30, but it's a building process. It starts at the individual, and it goes to family, neighborhood, and community. And community is as big as you want to make it. And it sounds like you, John, is making community the whole globe. So that's very commendable. So I really appreciate you listening to our show today. So I want to ask you to make sure that you're safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you until next time. Goodbye.